Welcome to The Hive Podcast, a show that helps inspire you to pursue your passions and ambitions. My name is Jared Spink, and I'm your host. I'm a photographer, videographer, and entrepreneur. Join me as I sit down with other entrepreneurs and creators to learn more about their process, how they've built communities around their brands, and the experiences they've had along the way. I hope that these conversations inspire you to pursue your goals. You're listening to The Hive Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. I am extremely excited about this week's guest. His videos have had a huge impact on how I run my production company and kind of taking my work from like that freelancer work to being a production company, you know, taking the business to the next level. So let's welcome Saj to the show. What's up, dude?
Hey man, thanks for having me.
Yeah. I appreciate you coming on the show. It's like I mentioned, your videos have had such a huge impact on my business and taking it to that next level. But let's kind of give some background on who you are and what you do. You run a production company, right? You are a filmmaker, correct?
Sure. Yeah. I live in Chicago. So back in the day, back in 2007, I graduated from a film school I went to here in Chicago called Columbia College. And pretty much right after I graduated, I had no idea what to do. The problem, I think, with film school is they teach you how to be a filmmaker, like a legit Hollywood system filmmaker. And the problem is, I think I would say maybe the entire time I was in film school, there was a story of like a handful of people that actually succeeded. And then in the meantime, there's thousands of people graduating. And this is in 2007. It's only gotten way more saturated than that. And what I saw after I graduated was me and everybody else that I was in school with, that I kept in touch with, we were struggling. We just had no idea what to do because film school did not teach us how to get work. They only taught us how to make movies. And again, we couldn't find work making movies. So then I found this whole business of making videos for companies. And I started right at 2007. The thing that really worked for me in the beginning was just wedding videos, events, you know, the things that just get everybody going. And it taught me a lot of valuable lessons, but I still couldn't make a living. I was just struggling through those first few years. And then I decided, just through freelancing for other video production companies that I had met, you know, from people from film school and different connections, I was like, wait a minute, the only people I see that succeed are not these freelancers that are just waiting for somebody to call them for their next gig, which was like, basically I did that from 2007 all the way to 2013, but I was always trying to find, this can't be right. Like, this is not the way I could sustain myself. And then in 2013, for the third time, by the way, I started a production company. So I tried it and tried it and tried it. And I kept like thinking a new name's going to matter and all this stuff. And finally ended up working in 2013. So it's almost been 10 years since I've ran that production company. And that I think is what really inspired me to transition my YouTube channel to teach people that exact transition from, hey, freelancer is good, but it might not be sustainable for most people. And from my own personal experience and all the headaches I went through freelancing, I was like, wait a minute, maybe there is something there. And I made a few videos and it resonated with people. And I switched my whole YouTube channel, my filmmaking YouTube channel, to be more specific about that transition and creating a video production company.
Yeah. I think your channel is filling such a huge gap that's out there, because there's tons of the gear reviews and then there's the tutorials on how to properly light something, or you know, they're just tutorials. There's endless tutorials, but there's not a lot like down to earth business content. Like, this is how you need, you can do all this, but if you can't run a business, you can't get clients, you can't price properly, you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge gap and you're feeling that. And I'm so happy I came across your videos, because pricing and profitability is something I'm hugely passionate about, because you can't make a living and can't survive if you're not passionate about that. The craft is great. The art is great. Being a creative is fantastic. But at the end of the day, we're like everybody else. We got to pay the bills. We got to put food on the table. We got to make money, and we shouldn't feel bad about that. Tell me, so you started a production company three times. Maybe if you don't mind going into some of the specifics of what were the struggles the first two times before that third time really clicked.
So the very first production company I had was just because I was doing weddings as a freelancer, I thought I should have a production company that shot weddings. That was the first thing I thought of. And it did pretty well. I think from between 2007 and 2008, the only 2 years I shot weddings, I shot somewhere between 30 and 40 weddings. And I had no idea how to price it. So I was obviously underbidding myself every time I was getting a wedding gig. I think I started doing weddings at like $600. And even when I thought I was at my prime, I was only getting like $1,800 or $2,000 for a wedding. And I would hire someone else to go shoot with me. And I never really made it a company. I just made it like a job for myself to go shoot weddings. And since I was in Chicago, the problem I had was the wedding season was so tight. Like it basically was just 3-4 months in the summer. And then the winter, you rarely shot weddings. So then I'm doing the math in my head and I'm like, wait, even if I shot a wedding every weekend where there was a wedding in the short wedding season in Chicago, I still couldn't make enough money. So that's sort of the first, you know, video production business, I call it. But it was really a job for myself that I created. So I shut that down because I decided that wasn't for me. And I really did not like shooting weddings, honestly. I've met a few people to this day that have done it for a long time. And I just don't get how that was a pleasant experience because of just how stressful shooting a wedding was. But I learned a lot from it. Then the second time was outside of film school, I started making a documentary film. And I followed a deaf family for many years. And it was a really heartwarming documentary film that eventually I released in 2015. So I spent many, many years. And while I was doing that, I got introduced to the healthcare system. I shot a lot in the hospitals for the film. And I met some university doctors that, you know, they would get me to do little projects here and there. So I was like, okay, let me do that as a thing that I'm doing the documentary, but I have all these resources with hospitals and connections. Let me just make like medical type videos. And at the time, I didn't understand niching down and like specifically picking something. It just happened to be something I fell into. So I started doing that for a while. But it was, again, something that wasn't sustainable because the real projects were so much above where I was that I couldn't expand. So I'm getting, $3,000 jobs here and there, very rare, where then I'm looking at other production companies that are doing the marketing videos for hospitals that are like $50,000. And I only knew this because I was still freelancing and seeing, I would be on those jobs as an assistant camera, as a media manager. And I was like, wait, how do I go from 3,000 to 50? That doesn't make sense to me. And these guys were like much older. And I just didn't even think I could compete. So then the transition, the production company I run now, I took it seriously. So I did all the paperwork. I incorporated. I spent money on the logo. I really wanted to have the mindset of like, that's it, man. This is not like you do this and that and 100 other things. Right. You're going to do this production company. And what I did was I pursued it as a production company that makes marketing videos. And then I realized, wait, that's not really a niche. That's just a type of video I'm going to make. So it was kind of confusing to me at first. Then I was like, okay, then what's my niche? The niche was the industry I wanted to serve, not the type of videos I wanted to make. And that's where I see a lot of filmmakers got real confused. It's like, what kind of videos do you make? And they're like, oh, I make product videos. That's definitely not a niche. That's just the type of videos you make. The niche has to be the very small segment of the entire world, right? The whole B2B industry that you serve. So then when I figured that out, I was like, okay, I make marketing videos and then I'm going to pick a segment that I'm going to go after. And that's probably where, through my YouTube comments and just through students that I've been helping out, the biggest hesitation that people have is they don't get that. They don't want to niche down. They want to make videos for everyone. And with a crazy saturated video creation market, you will absolutely fight at the very bottom of the barrel if you make videos for everyone. So when people come to you and they want a video, guess what? There's a million people that do that. So when I niche down though, I then took, you know, a huge saturated market and made it so small where almost nobody was competing with me. So in the very beginning, I pursued law firms even though I didn't really know anything about law firms, it's just when I was doing like kind of niche researching and targeted researching, I was like, oh, law firms are a profitable niche for marketing. I was like, oh, I'm going to pursue it with video marketing. And it worked. And I had to do a first one for free. That's, I think I did that like in end of 2012. Then I started learning, okay, how do I get people to see that I do this? That led me to search engine optimization and then learned me and then paid ads. In the meantime, I tried all kinds of different ways to get people to notice me. Email marketing and all kinds of, I was making random YouTube videos. Even on this channel, on my filmmaking channel, I have videos from back then, like teaching people how to use a 5D. That doesn't get a lawyer to find me, right? So it was just the, all the wrong approaches. And I see it to this day. People are like, I got to post on Instagram. Well, that doesn't really work. That doesn't help you that much. And that's really where the shift took place for me was like, okay, I'm going to learn marketing in one way or another. And there's a million ways to learn or to approach marketing. And to me, at the time, search engine optimization, but what I really care about now is paid advertising because you're basically in control. Search engine optimization kind of screwed me multiple times because Google would be like, okay, now you can't do this. And then it was like, okay, now go from number 3 to number 12, and then I have to work my way back. So I don't teach really search engine optimization these days, but back in 2013, it was kind of the gold standard. So that's really all those times I failed till it finally clicked for me. And really, every time I talk to people, it was all about niching down in the type of industries that you want to serve, not the type of videos you make. Then you decide what kind of videos you make for that industry. And then that expands out. So I would get in with a law firm with a marketing video. Then we do a training video for them, a recruitment video for them. And then it kind of expanded from there. And then I introduced more niches and things I really wanted to do, but I had to get in with one. And people are like, I don't want to make marketing videos for law firms. Well, you don't have to do that right now. You just have to pick something you're passionate about, make some videos, have some cash flow so you're not stressed out, then slowly transition away from freelancing. That took me a long time, by the way, too. It's not like in 2013, I had a video production company. I had a 7-year freelancing career, and I had moved up from PA to AC to media manager to camera op and to DP. And I was starting to do some decent DP gigs back into, so I didn't want to burn that bridge either, but I had to make a transition slowly. So I was doing too much, probably. I was working too much, but I think it worked out. I think that's kind of the transition point for me.
Yeah. I mean, having a plan in place is important, right? You can't just stop freelancing cold turkey and have a production company because it's just not going to work. You're not going to get enough business. Right. You're not going to succeed, and you might have to do something else to make a living in the meantime. Kind of rewinding all the way back just for a second, probably something I should have asked right off the bat is for anyone listening and they're wondering, well, what is the difference between a freelancer and a production company? Because I think if you're not in the industry, you might think they're one and the same. Like, oh, I'm hiring this guy to do my wedding. He runs a production company. He's a videographer, he's a cinematographer, whatever. How would you define the difference between the two? Because there is a huge difference.
Yeah. To the way I basically saw it, and I actually wanted to make a video because this I get this exact question a lot. But I think the way I see it is a video production company creates a video from scratch. It's full service. It's not just one thing in the whole production, in the whole video production creation, where a freelancing is more like a skill in one of the elements that make a video. So for example, when I was freelancing, I was like a camera operator. Like in the wedding business, I was a videographer. I was just doing one thing. And then I was like an editor sometimes, right? Then that's a job. Any one of those jobs doesn't create a whole video. But a video production company, I think of all the different elements. I actually broke this down just for this document I was putting together, where if you break down all the little tiny bits that takes to create an entire video from pre-production, you have a line producer, a writer. In production, you have, you know, DP, director, gaffer. Those are freelance jobs. Well, when you put all those jobs together in the editing, there's sound mixing, there's color correction, there's the editor, right? In the beginning, a lot of videographers do all of those things. So they're sort of a video production company, but not really, because those are like lots of different jobs. So to me, you're just freelancing in a bunch of different fields and you're a master of none, kind of, you know, you're a jack of all trades, which is what a lot of us start with. But then in freelancing, I saw like, if you want to level up as a freelancer, you got to specialize. If you tell people, if you are a freelancer that you do this and this and this and name bunch of stuff, you're never going to get the right rates anyway. I mean, I have some horrible, like embarrassing stories when I was started on when I was a PA, but I would tell everybody I was a director or a cinematographer. And now when I see people like that, I'm like, oh man, that was me. But I'm not that. Or I see people's resume and it's like author, entrepreneur, director, cinematographer, filmmaker, PA. What? I don't know what you do. So I'm not going to give you the money you deserve because you're not specializing. So same thing is with like niching with a video production company. I always tell freelancers, if you want to stay with freelancing and that hasn't bothered you, I rarely meet freelancers that are not burned out like in their 40s. So I always think there's plenty of people that do it in their 20s and 30s and don't burn out. So if you're there, I think to make more money, you got to specialize just like I have with the video production company. But I think back to your point, the big difference to me, a video production company is a full service agency, basically. It delivers all the different elements that it takes to make a good video from scratch, where a freelancer is really a very specialized job in one of those things. And if you're doing all of them, you're still a freelancer. You're just kind of gluing them all together, which is not the right approach because you're just going to get paid as a one-person band anyway and never get the right rates.
So how would somebody, let's say they want to transition from freelancer who's kind of doing it all to a production company because they don't want to get burned out. They don't want to be the one-man band. What are some of the first steps they should be taking to kind of make that transition?
So I actually, it's one of the hardest things I think to make the transition really from anything to anything else. Like in the last few years, I've tried to make my own content company and that has also taken me in the same path where I'm trying to transition to really taking a lot off my plate on the video production company side and really focus on the content side, which is hard. You know, like content creation just takes forever. And then if you're trying to run a platform on the back of that and run multiple YouTube channels, that's like a whole nother job. And I found out, you know, that the hard way as I did more and more. But what I found out for the transition part, the thing that's worked for me, this is the same thing I did in 2013. It's the same thing I did in 2017 when I started really focusing on YouTube with my other channel. What I did was I would just measure my time in a course of a week. And I would be like, okay, how many hours am I typically working in a week? Let's say as a freelancer, I was working 45, 50 hours a week. Then I'd be like, okay, how do I slowly take away time from that 50-hour batch and allocate it to something that's not that? So in the case of running my own company, it was I just really had to increase my hours throughout the week. So I would go from 50 hours, try to kick my freelancing down to 40. So that would require me to turn on one extra job a week. So I would make less money in the short run, but I had a 6-month kind of a plan. I was like, in 6 months, I want to completely turn this around where I'm freelancing 20 hours or 2 days a week. And the rest is running the production company. And that was like, even if I was doing free stuff, like learning search engine optimization, paid ads, it was part of it. So then I would just measure my time. The crazy part is I still measure my time like to this day, because it just was like the best thing I've ever done with my life. It's just like knowing how much time things take. So then every week I turn down jobs and it hurt in the short run. This is why most people don't do it. But I did it before too, when I went from an AC to a camera operator, or I had to turn down. If someone called me to AC, I couldn't just do it because then I was just busy as an AC and never get to the next level. I know production assistants to this day that can't get to the next level. They're stuck. But you have to take a short-term financial sacrifice. That's the only way, because you can't free up more time. So yeah, it sucked because for 6 months I made less money than I had made the year before. And the production company, I mean, it was getting work, but I was also spending so much money on the actual productions to make sure they're high enough level. So I would just hire like more expensive people than I was used to hiring. And I really wasn't getting the pricing right at first. It was more about just like trying to get work. So I would say in 6 months, it took me about 6 months to go to where it flipped. And sometimes I had to work 60, 70 hours a week because I had to get an extra 20 hours a week to work on the production company. But if I was still freelancing for 50 hours, I couldn't do that extra 20 hours because I would be so tired. Then the nice thing about running a production company is like, a lot of it is like this, like I'm sitting here and doing stuff on the, or learning. But when you do production, man, a 10 hour day, and I live in the suburbs. So like if I'm shooting in Chicago and the commute, I mean, it's like maybe 12, 13 hour day. It takes such a toll on me, especially if I'm DPing, which is like the most common job I would do on my own shoots too. It's physically just hard and it's mentally hard too. Even when I'm directing, it's, even though I'm not touching anything, it's mentally hard on me. So I get so exhausted. And I learned that the hard way in that transition time. I was like, I just work 70 hours instead of 50 and then I'll do 20 hours on the production company. But then I couldn't. I was 10 years younger. Like I can't even imagine, like my body hurts now. I can't even imagine doing that. But that's what I would recommend to people. Be like, you know, you got to cut your expenses down somehow because you have to take a short financial sacrifice. And if you can't do that, it's so hard. And most people that I see stuck in a position they don't want to be in is they're not willing to take that 6 months to transition and take a little bit of a short-term hit, you know?
Yeah. Transitioning can be so hard, but hopefully up until this point, you've heard some great advice on how to make that transition from a freelancer to a production company. But we're going to take a short break. When we return, we're going to talk about some of the pricing mistakes a lot of people make and the suggestions we have on how to properly price your work. So we'll be right back. I wanted to share with you one of the best decisions and investments I've ever made as a content creator. Nothing has impacted the quality of what I create and how I create as much as Ecamm has. Ecamm is the leading all-in-one live streaming production platform built for Mac. But let me tell you, it is so much more than that. You actually don't even need to live stream with Ecamm. You can use its powerful production platform like I do to record videos and podcasts to ease the burden of post-production. Ecamm supports multiple camera inputs, camera LUTs, and color correction. You can build in scenes, overlays, text, widgets, and sound. The ability to bring on remote guests and record multi-track audio has been huge for this podcast. Oh, and I almost forgot, Ecamm allows you to stream and record in 4K. Good luck finding another application that lets you do that. Rather than being a cloud-based application, which, let's be honest, usually spits out junk, Ecamm is an application on your Mac, leveraging your computer's processing power rather than some remote server, ensuring you get the most power and the best quality. From beginners to experts, from content creators to businesses, thousands trust Ecamm to power their video productions. Use the link in the show notes or the description of the video to download Ecamm and try a 14-day free trial. Use code JARED15 at checkout if you decide to purchase to receive 15% off. Trust me, your future self is going to thank you. All right, guys, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed this episode up until now, but now we're going to get into the meat and potatoes, the stuff that really drew me to your YouTube channel. And that was talking about pricing and pricing structure, because like I mentioned at the start, I'm passionate about pricing because as much as I love making videos and taking photos, I like making money too and being able to pay my bills and take vacations and go out to dinner occasionally. So let's talk about pricing. We were talking during the break, just me and you, about some of the techniques that you teach and for people to think about when they're pricing that have really benefited me as of late for a couple jobs. But let's talk about some of the mistakes first before we get into how you should be thinking about pricing. What are the biggest mistakes you see people making when it comes to pricing their work? And I think let's kind of dive in. I'm going to give you the first response, and that is pricing. You know, what's the difference between pricing as a freelancer and pricing as a production company?
Yeah, I think that's, if people are presenting themselves as a freelancer, you're competing with such a big pool of people anyway, and people see you when they hire you and then you show up, they see you as one person, right? So your rate could really only be so high. Even when I was working for like a law firm, right? If you show up by yourself and somehow you try to get your rate to be higher than the lawyer, and that lawyer's paying you, he's going to be super confused by that if you're showing up by yourself. So there's just a whole perception thing of you just can't charge that much as a single person production company or whatever right. you want to call yourself, or filmmaker, where as a production company, you could have many more elements in what you bring to the table. But one of the mistakes actually I saw that I was kind of surprised about, I made a video about it and a lot of people were, it was new concept to them. And I've done it just all the time. So I thought it was more commonly known, but the fact that you should 100% separate your labor, which is your time, from your gear. So I noticed a lot of people were bundling in their gear and themselves as one price. So let's say you're doing a shoot for $500, but that included your camera and your mic and your light kit and your tripod or whatever else you brought with you. And it definitely should not be like that at all. It should be, your labor should be a specific rate, and I'll talk about it in a second, but then you should break out, even if you keep this internal and just figure out pricing for yourself, figure out what you're bringing to the table. And if you're bringing a camera, you should price out that camera. And I usually think of it as a bundle. Here's a camera with three lenses. I do the math on that to see what other rental houses are charging for that. And I would charge that. And that's how I've been able to get like ridiculous amount of gear over time, which is also a disease. But because of being able to charge separately, so I could allocate different type of the revenue we're bringing. I did this as freelancer too. That's why I had so, like I, as a freelancer, I had like 7-8 cameras at one point, really for no reason, but I just had this thing of liking cameras. But that's how I did it, was just like, hey, $500 for you, $300 for the camera package and for maybe the tripod and things like that. And then maybe $100 for lights, $100 for sound. I broke down all these things and I made an internal pricing sheet for myself. And I pulled these numbers from a rental house. So if someone else, like a producer, was hiring me as a freelancer, they would get this stuff from the rental house. They don't have this stuff. So, and I worked with other people's gear sometimes, like back in the day where production companies, it was a mess because they don't maintain it. So it's much better to hire an owner operator so they show up with their own stuff, but I always have to separate the pricing. And when you get to the higher levels, it's not even a question. Like, obviously they're going to, like on movies, you know, they don't have the DP bring in a $100,000 camera, right? Because every time it's a different camera package, it's a different lens package. So I would say now it's a big portion of our revenue is just gear we own. A lot of times it's gear we don't own and we rent it out and it doesn't matter. We still have a little profit margin on the gear we rent out because you still got to go get it and it's a whole thing. But now we have access to pretty much any gear that the job needs. I don't have to always worry about like, do I need to buy this? Do I need to buy that? No, because I build the cost for that. So if I rent it, it doesn't make any difference to our company, right? Everybody still gets their rate. The freelancers get their rate. So that was one of the first mistakes. Your other point was about the video production company.
Yeah, like the,
how you separate the
Yeah, two. Like what's the biggest difference in pricing versus, you know, a production company versus a freelancer? And I think the point I'm trying to drive you to is that little extra you put at the bottom that a lot of people don't, right? When you're a freelancer.
Oh, the profit margin. Yeah. So basically the way I price my video production services, I just kind of see it as multiple different elements and I price each one based on the resources I need to do it. So a lot of times when a filmmaker does all of it, by the way, they don't think of all the stuff they do before they show up to the shoot, because a lot of freelancers just think of the production mindset. But man, you better be doing a lot of stuff in pre-production if you want your production to go smoothly. Yeah. And a lot of people don't charge for that. Emails and just thinking and the creative process.
Well, and even
and then once I get
even just prepping your gear, like if it's a bigger production, like prepping your gear and going through and charging all your batteries and making sure everything's good to go and then loading up the car, like all that takes time. Like it does. And if you're only billing for your time on the shoot, like you're working for free on that other stuff.
100%. And you have to do that at every stage. Even when I was fully DP as a freelance DP, my AC would go to a rental house. Even if we're not using my own, they had a prep day. I made sure the company that hired me gave my AC a full prep day. That was a full day rate. And their job was to prep. We weren't shooting anything. And the same thing I noticed in post-production, people underprice, you know, the time it takes to edit, to find music, to actually charge for the music you're licensing, all the little things that people don't charge for, not just the crew and gear in production. There's other stages of production. But when I get to the bottom, when I add up pre-production, production, and post-production, I typically, there's two things people don't add. One is overhead cost. So they don't think of all the little things it takes to run any type of company, right? You are renewing your LLC or your S corp probably every year. You got your email service. You got all kinds of little things that add up to be a lot of things. Yeah.
Business insurance, insuring all your gear, like all that costs a lot of money.
So yeah, when I look at every year, I'm like, wow, we were spending it. And I'm allergic to overhead. I try to have as little overhead because I've seen big production companies go bankrupt. So I try to keep overhead down and it still adds up to be a lot of money. So the very first thing I typically do is I add up all the actual cost, right, that we're charging the client for the pre-production, all the stages. But then I add a percentage as overhead, all that times a certain percentage. And overhead totally differs. Like if I work for a big production company, as a freelancer, a lot of times their overhead is like 50% or 70% or something crazy, right? Mm-hmm. But they have a building downtown and all this stuff. But at the very minimum, if you're like a one-person operation and you're hiring all freelancers to be a production company and you're just still showing up with like three people, you still should have like a 5% overhead. That at the very least covers your general liability insurance, right? You got, or your email or your domain. It's just a very small, but typically it's more like 10% or 20%. That's just the overhead. Then the final line is what makes you an actual business, which is your profit margin on all of it, right? Because if you just charge the clients your rates and the people you hired and your overhead, you're a freelancer. You just have a production company that makes no money and made a job for yourself, yeah, which is totally cool. Like I know a lot of people that do that. It still frees you from waiting on the phone to ring, right? So I still like that. It's still something, but it's really not a company. It's a job. You're just your own boss to some extent. So the profit margin from what I've seen is closer to 20%. This is on top of the overhead. It's another percentage point that I typically go back and add to all the line items I had. And I don't show all the little things to the client ever. I just show them more like big category
items. Because then they can start questioning, what's this? What's that? Do we really
need
that?
They do it all the time. I used to do it all the time. I'm like, yes, we really need the second camera because I know the talking head is going to have a bunch of jump cuts otherwise. And this is not a YouTube video and I can't leave in all the jump cuts.
Right.
So, but who's going to understand that conversation from a client's perspective? So I used to do it. I used to just line item everything. So that profit margin though could be very substantially different, again, depending on the size of your production and really depending on the competition. Because I found that a lot of production companies around me in Chicago are charging a 20% profit margin. So I couldn't all of a sudden be 50%, but then this goes back to niching down, right? If I was just competing with other production companies that were general production company, I'm competing on that 20% margin, right? But if I'm the top resort guy and Hyatt calls me for a video and this other production company is competing with me because they shot something at Marriott one time, all of a sudden they see the example and they're like, well, that's the resort guy. Obviously he's more expensive, right? You're the super specialized. So then that's where the profit margin really could change. And that comes down to the same thing we talked about in the beginning, which is just specializing. And when I work, like if a PR agency hired my production company or advertising agency hired my production company, I know they're marking me up 100%, right? So it just really depends on how the client perceives you. If they see you as a client, or as a advertising agency that's coming up with the concept and all that, they're willing to pay a whole lot more. As a production company that's more labor-based, it's a little bit more competitive. So I always try to just level up. I don't want to be an advertising agency and pitch things that way, but that's really how you could get to the next level, I think, if the client perceives you at a different point.
Yeah.
Then you could profit margin could be 50%, 100%, really whatever you want if you niche down right.
Man, so much good information there. And I can't stress enough how great your videos are into breaking all that down and helping. Well, they've helped me see how I can get more money out of my jobs, which at the end of the day, right? Like we should all be wanting, if you're running a business, you should be figuring out how to make your business more profitable. Cause in the long run, that means your business will sustain itself and grow. And I'm at that point where I'm trying to make that transition from freelance to more of a production company. Because like you said, when you start adding these production fees, you don't want to label it like that for the client. But when you, on your back end, start adding in these markups and these margins, like any other business. I mean, I was in the beer business for a long time. And if you, you know, sell a keg of Bud Light for like $125 and they get like 400 pints out of that thing and they're charging $6 for a 16 ounce beer. I mean, they're making a huge, huge profit margin. You shouldn't feel bad about making money. So, long story short, what I'm trying to say is when you have these margins, you can get to the point where you're managing the business and you have other people going out on these shoots and you can have more shoots and things can be a little bit easier on you and the business will sustain itself for a longer period of time versus you having to go out there when you're in your 50s and breaking your back, what you want to be doing.
And I've seen plenty of that. I think to your point too, one thing that people sometimes hesitate is when they do get a bigger job. The whole point of the bigger job was so you could get more people on that job and free yourself. But then I see some people not doing that. Like they do all the things that, you know, a lot of times I teach marketing and how to get clients and then they go do it and it works. And then they don't do the thing that was the whole point of scaling our company, which is get yourself off every shoot. So unless you do that, you really are just repeating the same loop. So I always recommend like, hey, once you land that job, and that's how I was able to level up my production. Like if I thought another DP that was more expensive than me, but I had built it into the cost could level up my production so then I could get a bigger client, I wouldn't be stubborn and think I should be the DP on this job when I just had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
So a lot of the earlier stuff, I was like, oh, I really have no idea how to do tabletop. I should probably hire a DP. It's my production company. They didn't hire me as the DP. They just hired my production company. So then those leveled me up. And then we had better examples. And every example wasn't something I shot.
Yeah.
Right. It was just a production company's demo reel, not
so awesome.
My DP reel.
So awesome. Right. And then like when you get into the production company, like you said, you don't have to hire yourself as the DP or director. Maybe you hire somebody more expensive. That's, let's be frank, better than what you could do.
Yes.
And then, hey, hire yourself as the producer. You can still be on set. Yep. If you still want to manage the project and see what's going on, hire yourself as the producer and let everybody else kind of run what's going on. But you're there to make sure the client's good and everything's going smoothly and that the job's staying on track. Man, just so many directions you can go. So for anybody that wants to learn more, I suggest that you go watch your YouTube videos. If anybody wants to find out information, where should they go to find out all the stuff that you're creating to help freelancers level up to production companies?
Yeah, I think this YouTube channel is actually going to have the information that we've talked about here. So I post once a week. I try to post once a week. It's just under my name, Sajid Deebs, or Filmmaking Mentor is the name of the channel. And I'm going to have more resources. I'm launching a website off of it too and all this stuff because it's just my passion to basically help people that either learned freelancing on their own or went to film school, but are missing this whole thing of the business side of that nobody seems to want to teach. And I didn't learn any of it in film school. So I'm really hoping in the next few years, this is really going to be my passion to just try to help people with that part. So hopefully they don't go through like, you know, the 7 years of kind of nightmare that I feel like I went through to get to the point where it started working for me.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Your channel is a huge resource. Thanks for coming on the show, man. Stay on. We'll talk afterwards, but thanks for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, I could not stress enough how you should go check out Saj's channel. It's fantastic. It's helped me make more money with jobs I've recently booked and kind of helping me see how I can level up my business to a point to where, you know, it's a little more sustainable and I'm not the one out there breaking my back when I get to my 50s or 60s or however long, right? We don't all want to be breaking our back out on jobs forever. So go watch his YouTube videos. If you enjoyed this episode and you're watching on YouTube, make sure you give it a thumbs up. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, I always appreciate a 5-star rating and leave a review. And as always, talk to you guys next week.